My first inclination when I got this golden sheet of opportunity was to erase my name since it's in pencil and put it in somebody else's box. And then I figured, well, I won't do that because July 7th seemed like such a far day off. But since it's been a few months, so I just kind of wanted to talk to you a little bit about my favorite psalm, and it's not going to, I think it's probably a lot of people's favorite psalm, and I just wanted to tell you a little bit about myself first and some challenges I've had as well that I kind of relate to the psalm. I would say my journey as far as becoming a Christian began actually probably 16 years ago. I was living in Plymouth, and I wasn't a Christian. I would say I would have thought I was at the time, but I had not really gone to, I grew up in the Catholic Church, and I hadn't been to church probably in 16 years or so. And I got a job here in Fort Wayne, so I moved to Fort Wayne, which turned out to be the best thing that's ever happened to me. I was just going through a lot of difficult issues at the time, and it was just an exciting, fresh opportunity. I needed a change of scenery, and so I ended up getting a job here in Fort Wayne at Park Center, even though I had no experience in the mental health field, and I look at it that how fortunate I was and how God definitely blessed me with that, even though, like I said, I wasn't a Christian at the time. And I worked with my good friend Tom Detmer here, and he was a really big help at Park Center my first year because I had no idea what I was doing a lot of the times, and he was a good mentor. And so about 14 years ago, he invited me to go to church with him at Fellowship Missionary Church. And it was at that point, about 14 years ago, I heard the message from Pastor Dave DeSelm there. And I realized I had never heard the gospel presented that way in my life before, and I became a Christian. About 14 years ago, it wasn't really one moment. I think it was just a culmination of things. And so I just look at how fortunate, it goes back to 16 years ago where I ended up here in Fort Wayne. And thinking, you know, if I had never moved to Fort Wayne, where would I be in my life today? As far as the most important thing, my relationship with God and Jesus. And so I ended up going to fellowship for about 5 years. Then I ended up coming here to Church of the Lamb downtown because I wanted to, fellowship's kind of a mega church, and I wanted something smaller. Although, I guess the good thing about a mega church is you don't get the golden sheets of opportunity to come up and speak to it. But all in all, it's been a positive coming here. So I ended up here in Church of the Lamb, and then we moved to this building. And so I just wanted to share Psalm 23. And written by David, who I would say probably one of my favorite characters of the Old Testament. And I would think probably a lot of people would say that because he was definitely a flawed person. But my impression was, I mean, he lived to glorify God. I mean, I'm not a theologian or an expert on the matter, but that's just kind of my impression. He made his mistakes. But Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, shall not be in want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. And even though I may walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. They prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Now, to me, that psalm just speaks to a lot of challenges we all have in today's world. I mean, we spoke about what happened Monday, and I tend to get down on the way things are going in this country and not realizing our heaven, our home is in heaven. This isn't our permanent home. And the challenges I face, I think, are related to that just because we have issues with the sanctity of marriage being defined a different way now than what's in the Bible. And, I mean, we had, in the last few weeks, somebody in Texas getting glorified for basically speaking for 11 hours to so that a potential law to protect unborn children wouldn't get passed. And we had our own president saying, you know, something special went on in Texas that night. And so I tend to maybe get discouraged, and I also tend to be judgmental about things like that, and I look at my own issues and realize that just that the most important thing here in our life is our relationship with God and Jesus Christ. And instead of maybe looking at disgust with others who don't share the values we share as far as our biblical values, to pray for them is the most important thing. And I know it's kind of difficult. And I look at my own challenges as well, just maybe the things I can do better in my walk with Jesus. I know I need to pray more, read the Bible more. It's easy for me to use as an excuse. I've got a 2-year-old. I'm working full-time, and I'm pushing 50, and the scary thing is I know people younger than me who are grandparents, so I know that my own challenges, that my faith in Jesus is a work in progress, and I need to do more. I need to maybe be understanding more of people as well that don't share our beliefs, because the reality is I look at myself where I was at 16 years ago in my life and how blessed I was to end up coming to Fort Wayne, and I believe finding Jesus as a result of coming to Fort Wayne. And so my challenge to myself, and not necessarily to others, is just to maybe be more understanding, pray more for people who don't share my beliefs, rather than looking, maybe being disgusted, just, which is easy to do in light of certain things going on in this country. Because I look at it like, you have Saul of Tarsus, who became Apostle Paul, the change in attitude he obviously had, that it is possible. And I'm going to work on praying more for our government leaders and just praying more for people who don't share my biblical beliefs, and maybe even people I disagree with. I mean, and maybe just to be more understanding with them as well. And people all in all who, I mean, the Bible is the word of God, and in this country it seems like it's becoming more politically incorrect every day. And just maybe, instead of, like I said, turning my back on people, maybe reaching out more and praying for them more. So that's just kind of the challenges I've gone through, and maybe to realize more that our heavenly home is our ultimate home and not here on earth in the current times. So my challenge, another, is just for myself as far as anxiety goes, just putting it all in God's hands, which is something I've had difficulty doing. I mean, I'm still a work in progress. And that's pretty much my challenge to me as well. I just feel I need to do better, and I can do better. And I thank you for the opportunity to speak to you.
Good morning. Galatians 5:22 to 23. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law. I was pleasantly surprised by Wendell's recent sermons on generosity. They were the perfect introduction to my personal reflection on kindness this morning. So I just want to publicly say thank you. Kindness is the quality of being friendly, generous, and considerate. Synonyms include compassion, thoughtfulness, and helpfulness. Overall, kindness is something that comes easily to some people. Take my mom, for example, who certainly falls into this category. She is a pleaser by nature and is truly one of the friendliest, most generous, and most considerate people I know. She's almost always thinking of others. I'm certain that those of you who know her are nodding in agreement. She has truly taught me well, and while I'm still a work in progress, I do think that overall I'm improving with age. Just like Wendell stated a few weeks ago, one of the biggest problems with kindness, goodness, joy, generosity, and the like is how easy it is to be kind and good and joyful when people are kind and good and joyful with us. But what about when they aren't? Recently, I had my kindness gene put to the test while I was doing some eBay shopping for my mother-in-law. She collects these little figurines called Query Kids and pairs each Query Kid she owns with each of her grandkids. She is currently hoping to find one of a little girl named Kathy holding a little cat named Chelsea. She actually already owns this particular one and has assigned it to Claire, but she likes it so well that she wants another one for one of Sean and Kay's girls. Every so often, I do a quick eBay search to see if there are any for sale. In May, I stumbled upon one, but unfortunately, Kathy and Chelsea were listed with Perry and Peanut, and my mother-in-law doesn't need Perry and Peanut. So I emailed eBay seller ZDow2386 to see if he would consider selling Kathy and Chelsea alone. You should know that most Query Kids sell anywhere from a couple of dollars up to about $10, and while these two figurines should have been somewhere in the $20 to $25 range, with shipping, ZDow2386 was asking a shocking $55 for his two figurines. Obviously, this was more than double than what I had ever paid for a Query Kid in the past, and I think I had to pick my jaw up off the floor when I read the asking price. On a side note, throughout this entire ordeal, I've continually referred to ZDow2386 as a he. Josh insists that he could be a he or a she, but for the sake of argument this morning, let's make it easy and refer to him as a he, because I think he's a he. Anyway, the auction was set up with a buy it now or best offer option, where buyers can either pay the $55 or contact the seller and offer a lower amount for the item. With the ridiculously high price of these figurines, I was guessing that ZDow2386 was hoping some random uninformed buyer would come along and offer $10 less than his asking price, and that he would pocket a bit of the cash well beyond his initial investment. Obviously, anytime there's a best offer option, the seller's willing to take less money for their item. So I decided with the best offer option that I didn't have anything to lose. I knew what my mother-in-law was willing to pay, and I figured the seller could always say no. I shot off a quick email to see if he would take a lower price. Dear ZDow2386, I am interested in the Kathy and Chelsea figurine. Would you be willing to separate the two figurines if they don't sell and sell the little girl by yourself? I'm willing to pay $14 for her, including shipping. If not, best of luck selling them. Sincerely, Lamprey247, which that's our username based on the old softball team at the church. Is that right? At the old church? I think Dave Pilgich, who's in the nursery, told me that one time. So anyway, now I have completely given him the option to reply with a simple no. But, and I didn't mention anything about his outrageous price or that he should feel like he's stealing money from anyone who might even come close to paying his ridiculous asking price. I have stated my intentions clearly and kindly and have given him nothing but an easy opportunity to turn me down. Here was his response, with my emotional emphasis included. Dear Lamprey247, okay, let's see if I'm understanding you correctly. The pair are selling for $55, and your offer is for me to split the pair and sell the girl for $14 with shipping included? Where do I sign? ? At this point, my blood began to boil, my snarky attitude began to surface, and my self-control felt lacking. My initial thought was, goodness, just say no. Adding something like, have a nice day, would have been a nice touch as well. But no, ZDow2386's response was dripping with sarcasm, and unfortunately, sarcasm is something in which I am extremely well-versed. With my blood boiling, my snarky attitude, and my lack of self-control, ideas were racing through my mind, and while I didn't send the message I'm about to spout off to you, I'm certain that I could have composed it in 30 seconds flat, because I type fast when I'm mad. And this is what I felt like saying. Dear ZDAO2386, yes, you're reading me loud and clear. Your asking price is outrageous, and only someone who missed the common sense bus would purchase your figurines. In fact, if you do sell them, let me know. I have some oceanfront property in Arizona that I'm looking to unload. And by the way, now that you've wasted 5 minutes of my time, I'd like to change my offer from $15 to $12. Sincerely, Lamprey247, with a smiley face added at the end for good measure. But I didn't send it. Like I said, I didn't even type it. I couldn't send it. That's not the kind of email I would send. My mother is going to be utterly disappointed to know that I have such horrid thoughts running through my head. And I'm guessing some of you might feel the same way. You see, there is still a lot of nasty sin nature that needs to be worked out of Jackie Meyer. Am I being too honest up here? Instead of post-conversation remorse, I was thinking I was going to have post-personal reflection remorse after this. So, while ZDAO2386 was having an attitude with me and I was admittedly fuming, I decided not to respond to him rashly. Instead, I pulled myself together, reminded myself that I am indeed a kind person, and, in fact, I can respond respectfully. Dear ZDAO2386, have you checked the completed listings on these query kits? I'm offering you a fair price for something that I'd like to purchase. I've purchased approximately 15 of these in the past, including this exact figurine, and I haven't paid over $15 for any single one, with shipping included. Sincerely, Lamprey247. I focused back on my main issue as price being too high. I was gently reminding him that he might be asking a bit too much for his figurines and that this was a chance to unload one of them. Maybe he hadn't taken the time to research his sale. Maybe if he knew that I was indeed an experienced query kit buyer, and that I am in fact being fair with him, maybe he would reconsider. I eagerly awaited his response, hoping for something a bit more positive. Dear Lamprey247, hooray for you. I would rather keep them than give them away for $5. Just saying. I'll spare you my thoughts regarding this particular email, only to say that I was verbally reminding myself to have patience, show kindness, and work on that haunting character trait of self-control, which, by the way, I felt I was seriously lacking. So I dug down deep into my kindness gene, scraped the bottom of the barrel, and came up with this response, which I felt even my mother would approve of. Dear ZDAO2386, like I said in my first email, best of luck with your sale. Sincerely, Lamprey247. It was truly the only kind thing I could think of to say at the time. He didn't respond. The sale was being offered for 30 days. I had it on a watch list if I needed to find it, and I assumed that we would not have any further interaction. I was wrong. A week or so later, another message from him popped into my inbox. It was simple, short, and to the point message. It was one word, typed in all capital letters. It read, "Sold." I took a deep breath. I was not going to respond. I was determined to show self-control, even though I was certain that he had signed his mom up for eBay and used her account to purchase his figurines. I deleted the email and chose not to let it bother me. Another week went by, and I'm certain that my thoughts of it were minimal, if at all, truly. Then one day, I received an email directly from eBay. Good news! An item you've been watching has been relisted. Two Query Kids figurines are again available for purchase from seller ZDAO2386. Well, now, isn't that interesting? I'm not going to lie. Forwarding that email to him did, in fact, cross my mind. But again, I chose not to respond, even though my husband was sitting right next to me saying, "How can you totally not call him out on this?" Deanna, I know you're thinking the same thing. Amanda, I think you are too, yeah. And if we get a unanimous vote at the end of the service, I might still do it, so. I'm kidding, I won't. Kindness is so easy to return when people are kind to us, but it's unbelievably challenging, at least to me, when people are not. When someone holds a door for you, it's so simple to say, "Thank you." When your best friend calls at the perfect time, it makes your day. But what about someone who isn't your favorite person but wants to chat for 20 minutes? What about people who have nothing to offer you in return? How do you respond to those who are rude to you? I know I would have responded differently in regards to my interactions with this eBay seller at various times in my life. In fact, I would have responded differently if we would have been conversing over the phone or face-to-face. I'm certain that my irritability, shock, and frustration would have been more than obvious. One of my goals this year was to focus on showing everyday kindness and serving others. And I really am talking about simple things, like holding doors for people at the store, even when my hands are full of kids. Saying thank you when receiving a compliment, not being too proud to compliment someone who deserves it. Looking for an elderly person or a mother with children to help in a parking lot. Taking meals to those in our church body who are in need, even when it's not convenient. Keeping my mouth shut when I'd really like to respond with the dripping sarcasm that's stewing in my head. And even when I'm conscious of my effort, I continually fail. Genuine, everyday kindness is seriously lacking in our society. I'm not a big fan of being fake or putting on a show, but in regards to stepping up our kindness levels when it feels like a chore, we really need to fake it till we make it. What if we were all putting forth just a little more effort? Think of all the good that could be passed along. You might start by smiling and looking people in the eye while saying thank you, or maybe you need to take a deep breath and rethink your tone of voice when responding to someone who is irritating you. If you're already doing those things, you might try doing an actual act of kindness. You might ask your spouse what you can do to be helpful to them this week. You might bring a friend coffee or dessert just because. If you're a younger person, you might do an extra chore for your parents or a sibling. Take time to seek out someone to be kind to. The good news is that the list could go on and on. The opportunities are virtually endless. Taking the time to send an actual pen and paper letter through the mail to a friend to say hello, and I've been thinking about you. Giving others the benefit of the doubt. Saying I'm sorry when you've wronged a friend or a family member. Saying I'm sorry when you've wronged someone you don't even like. Showing some self-control when you'd really like to get the last word in a disagreement. Responding kindly when your 5-year-old asks you the same question over and over and over and over again, even though you've answered her 3 times already. Notice that I put that one pretty far down on the list because you have to have kindness superpowers to be able to handle things of that caliber. So my challenge to you this week and to myself as well is for you to find a way to bulk up your kindness game. If you're doing nothing, do something. If you're doing something, do more. Up your game. Put forth more effort. Seek ways to make even a small impression, no matter your starting point. And then do it again next week and again the week after that. Be friendly, be generous, and be considerate. And in the words of J.M. Barrie, always be a little kinder than necessary.
Well, it's a small world. I also worked at Park Center about in the early 90s. My opportunities were going to work and finding out that my boss asked me to impromptu go on the news or go to a panel and speak about what our program was doing on crack cocaine because I worked in the drug and alcohol department. So this I know today will be a lot easier than what I experienced those days. My golden opportunity I want to focus on would be a recent challenge in my life, and I thought about all of you today, and I hope that we can work through this together. My childhood is an important place to start because it forges the path that brought me to where what I'm about to explain. It is amazing to me to look back over my life and see how long-reaching the situations and circumstances of early days affect the decisions that made me into the person I am today, into adulthood. I was born into a Catholic family, and I was the youngest of 3 girls. I was a tomboy. Proud of it, pixie cut, no shirt, would go out and play kickball, that was my favorite memory, with the neighborhood kids on the dead-end street at the Point. We would go to the Spiron Creek and catch crawdads with our bare hands. Life was great. That was my memories of living in Fort Wayne. The summer of my 7th year, my sister and I were playing outside with the neighborhood friends when all 3 of us girls were summoned into the home. I thought I was in terrible trouble because earlier that day, I snuck into my mom's Coca-Cola, something you just did not do. in our home. I was born in 1963, so I'm giving my age of what, you know, what was going on at that time. I'm sure that the hand of discipline was going to make its way across the seat of my pants, but what happened next was not the case. Dad and Mom sat us down and told us that they were going to divorce. I watched through tears as Dad packed up his belongings and loaded them into what was so-called the Herbie Volkswagen. From that afternoon forward, life became, to be put it mildly, very turbulent. By the time I reached high school, I had lived in eight schools, 13 homes. Three marriages and divorces were resulting in two half-brothers. One particular summer during my high school years, I came to Fort Wayne to spend the summer with my cousin. Leanne was very kind to me, and I remember, like yesterday, she just shared everything with me. She said, "You're my sister." At the close of the summer, I was prepared to return to Florida and start school. What I did not realize that my mother and aunt had talked and that I would be staying in Fort Wayne and that it would be better for me. I had no choice in the decision, and I was horrified by the thought of not seeing my mom again. I'm happy to say that after 30-some years, in February of this year, my mom is back in Indiana, and I do see her quite regularly, and it's been fun. It's been nice. My chaotic life growing up taught me that I needed to be self-reliant. I learned that I could not trust in others and that all those that I cared for had let me down. I vowed as a young adult that I would be in control of every situation that I found myself in. I need to add that at this time, God was not a part of my life. And so most of my decisions that I made involved some type of sin, along with a mindset of self-preservation. I graduated from IPFW with a degree in mental health technology and went on to get my state certification in drug and alcohol counseling. Shortly afterwards of college, I sold my bed on Peddler's Post, called American Van Lines to come and pick up my stuff. I jumped on a plane to Texas. I'd been living with my father at this time, so I thought they deserved at least a week's notice of my departure. Mark, on the other hand, he got about 2 days' notice. Fast forward several months, and my life was back to the chaos. However, this time it was brought on by more of my choices. I will not share the details, but suffice to say I suffered a lot of pain, hardship at the hand of those decisions that I made. I'm thankful that Mark was there to take me away from what I had brought upon myself. I found peace and stability in my relationship with him, something that I longed for. After a 1.5-year engagement, we are married in the Catholic Church. Today we have shared 27 years of marriage together. We were engaged 1.5 years. We were married in the Catholic Church, and that's what we were born and raised into. Neither of us particularly were interested in the covenant vows that we were making before God. Shortly after our marriage, we began to pursue what I will call spiritual matters. More seriously, we did. We did not know what we were looking for. We just knew about the entity of God. We attended the Catholic Church for a short time, and then began attending churches that our friends recommended. It seemed like the logical place to start. That's what we thought. We went to the inner city, charismatic churches. We went to small Pentecostal churches. We went to churches that Mark danced in the aisle. I did not. And a few churches that spoke in tongues. It was all confusing, and I did not want any part of it. And most of all, we even ended up in the Mormon church for 3 years. So I asked myself, what was I doing to come beside Mark in this pursuit of God? Nothing. I went along for the ride. I had traded in my self-reliance for the reliance I had found in the security of my husband and now my growing family. At 34, I was listening to a teaching on hell. After 10 years of following my husband into all types of different theologies, I had never considered what would happen after life. As I said, I was absorbed in my family. I was at this point that I decided I needed to seriously consider my relationship with Christ. I was baptized and I began to spend time in His Word. I could see my own sinfulness. It was obvious that Mark was. We talked about this as writing. And that I needed to rely on God and His Word and stop relying on fallen man. I had no idea how deeply I would be tested in the coming years. Prior to coming to Trinity, my family and I shared several years of fellowship with many who are now visiting Trinity today. And like many, I observed situations, circumstances that seemed to contradict or was absent with what I read in Scripture. The teachings of Christ's finished work on the cross and the message of His grace and mercy seemed to be missing. I committed myself to not follow man. It was evident to me that it is what I needed to do. I saw the evidence of destruction, criticism, broken families, and I told myself that I could not follow the path that worked going down for my family. I had to try and stop, but this time it was very evident that I had no power over the situation. In my commitment to Him, I had to choose Christ over the direction of my husband was leading, so I left the church. My decision to leave was followed by 15 months of spiritual separation from my husband and son. I was submissive to Mark's request that I not attend another body during that division. My first Sunday was at Trinity a few years ago. Every Sunday morning, I was poring over God's Word, looking for His encouragement in contrast to what was going on between Mark and me. I was praying fervently for His intervention. I had nowhere else to turn but to His providence over the situation. Often I focused on places in the Bible that spoke of Christ's abandonment by His followers and even His best friends. I also read of God's bringing the Israelites through the desert, showing His commitment to those He loved. Within His Word, I found peace and solitude. Over the past 6 months, I witnessed God's work in my life and in the lives of many here today. He's shown Himself to be faithful, intervening into a church situation in which only things I could control was by offering prayer for those who were still attending. This past Easter, I had the privilege of being a part of a 50-plus people coming to Tech and shared in the celebration of the wondrous gift offered to us through His suffering, Christ's suffering, death, and His resurrection. During that service, I reflected on how my suffering paled in comparison to His. I learned that I must come to the end of myself and allow Him to work through those situations. I've come through this to enrich a relationship with Christ and with many others. Reconciliation, reconnecting to restore broken relationships, has been a true blessing to my family, myself, and I know many others today here. I'd like to end with this. I'm very happy to be a part of a church body where my family can rest, grow, and learn of God's goodness. I'm happy to be a part of a church that welcomes visitors. I'm happy that we are all here, and I continue to pray God's healing upon those that are hurting, and He rich them blessedly. And that Tech continue to grow in fellowship with committed believers. Thank you for the opportunity.